Ja, wir wussten ja, dass wir ein wichtiges...
Well, we knew that we'd be speaking about a very important subject these days, but the fact that so many people would show up at 4:30 was still a surprise indeed. So welcome to the new alphabet here at the House of the Cultures of the World, Haus der Kultur und der Welt. Exactly six years ago, at the same point in time, here at the Haus der Kultur und der Welt, we opened the project which was called the Anthropozän Project. And today, with the new alphabet, we will be closing off the trilogy that we have actually carried out throughout these last years. Now, what does this trilogy mean within the work of this house? Well, with these three major subjects, we looked into the transformation processes, the processes of change that currently affect our societies. The Anthropozän Project basically started out by asking the question how human beings, through technology and through the resources of this planet, actually transform the whole of the planet. So not just the minor interferences with nature here and there, but rather the overall change concerning the whole planet, which is at the same time destabilizing for all the material connections on this planet that led to phenomena like climate change and the scarcity of resources and so on. And this, of course, increasingly also has an impact on the processes of our societies. The second project was 100 Jahre Gegenwart, 100 years of present times. And there we looked into the quantification of time and how that quantification actually changes the way we deal with time and how we developed in a situation where societies are actually accelerating increasingly, so that many of us have the feeling that we are participants in a rat race and we even have to run even to remain standing in a single spot. Now, with the new alphabet, we try to talk about the question of in how far alphabets contribute to the disruption of our societies and of the planet as a whole. Now, before I go into the details, I would like to start by thanking all of those who made this possible. On the one hand, of course, the artists, the scholars that have now for more than 2.5 years worked on this project together with us, the project that will be unfolding over the next couple of days. And I would also like to thank the Federal Commissioner for Culture and the Media, Ms. Monika Grütters, who also supported this project. But I would also like to thank the Federal Parliament, the Bundestag. And here let me single out Mr. Kruse, who will also speak a couple of words after me. And he was also responsible for making the funding of this project possible. And thirdly, I would like to thank my incredible team for realizing this rather very complex and making these next couple of days possible. Over the next days, you will experience this house is a venue, which no longer is a venue for exhibitions, and at the same time, it's not a university either. It is something like a rehearsal stage that you can walk onto, a stage on which we try to understand in what kind of situation we currently find ourselves, but also try to imagine what kinds of possible different futures there may be and what the possible alternatives may be to the situation that we currently find ourselves in. Now, why is the title The New Alphabet? We are living in a time where we are ordering taxis from companies that do not own a single car themselves. We are checking into hotels with companies that do not own any physical space that they're actually renting out. We're using health apps in order to find out how we should best eat and what kind of diet we should adhere to and how to best move and exercise. That means that we're increasingly living in a world that for a very long time was a kind of, you know, parallel world to the technology, but this technology is becoming something of a technosphere that is increasingly influencing our lives and changing our lives. You know, if we start, and when we start using health apps as an orientation, we no longer trust our own bodies or our own feelings, but we actually trust algorithms that play back certain information into our bodies. And that means that we've developed technologies that change our lives in a very fundamental way, and also fundamentally change the question of what subjectivity is and what democratic processes could be. I'll get back to that in a moment. Now, why the subject of alphabets? Why not speaking about digitality or the digital world to begin with? Well, it was important for us to understand what the logic is behind these civilizational technologies that over centuries, sometimes even over millennia, developed like this. And please allow me to say a couple of words about alphabets as such. Alphabets are enormously efficient instruments, and they allow us to use very few single letters and use these letters in order to create a never-ending multitude of different concepts and words. And that allows us to classify the world, to order the world, to put the world into categories. So these are elements of order. It's an ordering technology. But at the same time, there is a certain ambivalence to be found here, because those who do not know certain alphabets, cannot use certain alphabets, do not have access to that world I'm speaking about. So in the history of humanity, time and again, for example, in colonial contexts, it happened that the colonial power actually made sure that the alphabet that's used for the bureaucracy and the organization of the state that is observing and controlling the imperial regions, that this knowledge remained a knowledge of power. And those who were colonized, on the other hand, developed a form of counter-codes, counter-alphabets, in order to organize themselves and to erect a kind of counter-world. That was the fact in the colonial context, but of course it was then carried over to the 20th century in the context of nation-building, where there were actually real wars of alphabets, if you will, about the question of which alphabets should become the written foundation of certain states. And we will get to hear about this in the coming days in different contexts. Slavs and Tatars, for example, they will look at the situation in Russia. Ms. Tietze tonight, during one of our panels, will also look into this question. And she will look at the time of transition after the Russian Revolution. And that played a very, very important role during that time. Now, this ambivalence to, on the one hand, be able to say, okay, we have resources at our disposal that allow us to understand the world, and on the other hand, you can use the same resources in order to create power in asymmetries. That was always a characteristic of alphabets. And today, we have an alphabet that actually rules the whole world like none before, and that is the binary code of digitality. The binary code is, in that respect, a very special alphabet, as it only consists of two signs or two symbols, like plus and minus, or rather, one and zero. And these two symbols just mark a difference. They do not carry a meaning in themselves. They are not, you know, carrying any kind of semantic meaning themselves. And it is this characteristic that is marking the difference. And to be the most abstract level of them all means that all languages, all alphabets, can be translated into the digital binary code. And that was actually also the reason, or the basic idea, behind the invention of the binary code. Leibniz, in the 17th century, he developed the binary code because, for him, it became the very foundation for a universal language that, in the meaning of Leibniz and the understanding of Leibniz, the whole knowledge of the whole world was supposed to have been grasped. And this was, for him, the foundation, because knowledge could not only be written down and depicted, but could even be calculated with that. So it became the very foundation for a certain form of calculus with Leibniz. So that knowledge and insight could become calculable. And this idea of being able to calculate things is actually then the foundation for the development of digital technologies using machines in the 20th century. The technological implementation of this idea by Leibniz still led to two or three rather fundamental changes, because for Leibniz, the basic idea was that the binary code, or rather the universal language, should only represent existing knowledge. But by translating it into the technologies of the 20th century, we're no longer talking about the representation of reality alone, but rather that with the help of algorithms, we can now create new worlds and create new realities, and that's what's so interesting about it. And of course, we all know that when the World Wide Web started, you know, to go into operation in the early 80s, there was a great hope tied to it of the democratization of knowledge. And, you know, this rested also on the fact that all knowledge could be translated into the digital sphere and thus make it accessible to everyone. But we also experienced over these past 20 years that because this is such a powerful instrument, that, of course, this also gave rise to business models that follow their very own logic and that go way beyond the idea of democratization and that form certain segments within an otherwise open digital world. Now, why are these business models quite so efficient? And that is also linked back to the question of what we can find between the one and the zero, the one and the O. Because between these two symbols, you could provocatively say, you find life. Life, because life itself is a process that cannot be differentiated at all. It's an analogous, open process. And there are, you know, experiences and insights that we have, and they are innumerable. And that is why business models are very interesting, that actually try to tap into the creativity that we find in this never-ending plurality of experiences that constitute life, that, you know, adapts this never-ending resource and transforms them into products that can then be sold. So, just by the fact that we are alive and that we're connected to this technological world, we become producers within a system of which we don't really know what it does to our lives. So in that respect, the core question for the next 3 to 4 days could be put as follows. Are we living in a world where we are still writing the alphabets? Or are we being written with the help of those alphabets? And one last remark. You know, concerning our title, The New Alphabet, what's so interesting is that the abbreviation for the German version, Das Neue Alphabet, is DNA. And that, of course, also stands for the genetic code. And the interesting thing is that the idea of the possibility of differentiating and controlling, in this case, has been translated into life itself. And we know from the most recent information from China that it is no longer just a theoretical idea, but that now it's actually feasible, not just technologically, but, you know, that it's actually also being carried out in reality. So what we are witnessing here is a central disruption, if you will, because the digital world that I just mentioned a moment ago, you know, there the question was whether we as human beings are still the acting relevant party or whether we are the subject of processes. But when interfering with the genome, then in the long run, the question will rather be whether we are and will be changing the very basics and foundations of what life is as such. So this is my analysis of the current situation, and now the question arises of what should be done. But I don't want to really go into the details of that question. Let me just sketch out the overall framework of the coming days and the bandwidth of ideas that will be discussed here. You will hear proposals that ask for a new form of digital enlightenment, a form of enlightenment that actually reflects upon what these new technologies mean and how we can deal with them. And you will also get to hear proposals about the kind of political regulatory mechanisms that may be necessary. But we will also get to hear ideas that are rather more imaginative when speaking about the future of information and communication. As, for example, as part of a performance that is all about showing that the future of communication and of information may not be found in the physical world and the world of digital, but rather in the form of the biological, and that in future these kinds of processes could be imagined as processes of metabolism, you know, of digesting, if you will, and that of course has an entirely different kind of implication as compared to the idea of separate and discrete signs. And tonight you can also experience performed by Helge Schneider, who will be a robot whisperer, and he will there try to show how he makes sure that robots don't just go off and do whatever they want to. So with that, welcome to the new alphabet. I would now like to give the floor to Mr. Kruse, and I would like to repeat my thanks to you personally and the Federal Parliament, the Bundestag, who supported us, and then my colleague Olga Schubert, who is also a co-curator. She will then describe to you the program in detail. Thank you very much indeed. Bernd Scherer just explained what the new alphabet is and what it actually is, just as the Anthropocene was, or the project called 100 Years of Presence. Well, these are arbitrary projects of the Parliament. You know, I mean, I'm saying this because you tend to remember certain things that were written in the newspaper, and they discussed the question how the German Parliament came up with the idea to not just make funds available for individual departments, but to really determine in concrete terms what should be done with that money. And this criticism was not against the fact that we once decided to build five new frigates, we were talking about culture, and this shows how relevant culture actually is. And yes, this is an arbitrary project, and it was at the same time deliberately chosen by the Parliament. And we started out with a project on the Anthropocene, saying that we need a place where we can kickstart new trains of thoughts about the things that we will have to deal with politically over the next years, and the result of which we do not yet know anything about. You may be familiar with expert papers. Most people, when commissioning expert paper, already know what kind of result they're hoping for, and if this result is not achieved, people will have to work on it again. But we didn't have this kind of basic understanding with Mr. Scherer. During the first project of the Anthropocene, we said, okay, it's a very interesting question whether we are now living in a time where human beings are not just important and present, but rather really shape and perhaps deform the whole planet. Why is that important? Well, because politically speaking, we still have this romantic notion of the refuge that we could find in nature. You know, there is this idea that when the people who are governing do everything wrong, there's still Mother Nature that we could always return to, and Mother Nature would heal everything. But if the Anthropocene is real, well, you might still believe in God who might interfere, but apart from that, there is nothing left but human beings. So in that respect, it is politically important, and that is also why we didn't really define all the details of the project, but allowed a certain leeway, and I believe that it was a very, very good outcome indeed. And this also now holds true for the new alphabet. Ben Scherer just talked about technological processes, processes of progress. And, you know, many, many thousands of years ago, people actually also believed in progress, and that is when they started building the Tower of Babel. And we remember, well, not personally, but collectively, that back then God was not our dear Lord yet, but that he still was, developing into a God that dealt in love and compassion. So he was not really sympathetic to the idea that people would be building that tower, so he destroyed the tower and he created the plethora of different languages in Babylonia. But of course, human beings went on to shape the world, and Bernd Scherer talked about the role of alphabetization, and the, you know, the effort of trying to divide humanity, which sometimes was also successful by, you know, introducing different languages or alphabets. Well, we know what this means. You know, you may be thinking in German, and the whole world also got to know what that meant in a very painful fashion in the past. So, but, you know, speaking one language also, and, you know, leads to the question of whether it can be translated into any other language, although there now is this kind of linguistic code with which I could write down everything that can be measured, can be seen, can be felt. And that is an enormous process. And that will lead to new thoughts, ideas, and developments. And it is actually foreseeable, and it's also okay, that there will be quite a number of different commercial answers coming up. Of course, Facebook, Google, and co. will use these possibilities and turn them into opportunities and come up with proposed answers, and that's okay. But these should not be the only proposals, and these should not be the only proposals that we can rely on. That means we have to become politically active. And that is also the reason why we want a place that is at the same time also very close to our parliament here, a place that works on an opinion of their own, an opinion that we can then look into and hear about, because the questions of digitization are questions that we cannot yet fully answer today. But it's one of the sources that either can lead to hope or trigger uncertainties, and that is why it's important that the biggest possible number of people deal with this idea and contribute to the development of answers. And we, as the commissioning party, do not know what the outcome will be, but we hope that we will also get a certain inspiration when it comes to the question of how to deal with these ongoing developments. So let me underline again that I consider it a huge benefit for us to be able to have this place and to be able to use this place. And that this is also a place that for a very, very long time has always displayed a high level of interest. So it's always nice to meet with a small number of people in smaller rooms. But, you know, in these subjects that are not necessarily part of the mainstream discourse, like the Anthropocene, you know, when they hung up the posters, I don't think that many people said, oh, the Anthropocene, I've heard about that. I always wanted to talk about that. Well, now the project is called The New Alphabet. I was always a fan of the film called The Brand New Testament. This may not be quite as funny here, but, you know. And but as you are here, it is very, very apparent that the HKW is a place for discussions in society. And we want this society to then also find its way into parliament so that we can take it into account when it comes to shaping the future of our country, because that is our task. And that is why I would like to thank the HKW for its contribution. Hello, welcome. It's so nice to have you here. It really looks great to see you sitting here in this arena. I would like to apologize for not having that many seats here, but, you know, distributed all through the building, we've got 1,800 seats, and the program will then start in parallel in the lecture hall and in the auditorium. And I would now like to guide you through the program.
English, I know there are some. Do go out and get your headphones. It will be much easier because the program here will continue in German and also in the other rooms. The main language for tonight is German. The headphones are outside the exhibition hall entrance when you get out on the left. So.
Right. As you know, we have a very impressive first day of the opening days of our new project, The New Alphabet, with a comprehensive program with Alexander Kluge. But let me now guide you through the overall program of the opening days from today until Sunday. And it would be best for you to just take the program booklet or go and get it later on. It costs €2. In the black sections, you can see the running order of the different elements, and the white pages contain essays, and on page 28 in the German program booklet, you can now follow me in my explanations. The entrance is free for all the events until Sunday, and I think the major problem will be one of seating. The objective is to connect different positions and quite literally as bodies in space. And that's why it's so important that you are here, because you are part of this process of forming connections. So we are very pleased to be able to welcome you here indeed, and our work really was worth it now. Now, Alexander Kluge will be responsible for tonight's evening, Zet to Omega, and the connection that we're wishing for will happen in five different places here in the exhibition hall with our circus arena, up there in the large auditorium, then in the lecture hall on your way to the restaurant, then outside in the foyer. You may have seen a couple of scenes there already, and then there is the conference room one in the very back of the venue where our musicians will be playing. Here in the exhibition hall, we will have what we call our alchemist's kitchen. This is where all the strands will come together, and the things that used to be separate can be remixed. But it's also the circus inside of which we can mix and resort everything. Tonight, here on this stage, there will be the panels one, 2 and 5, chaired by Alexander Kluge, or rather the moderator will be Julia Voss, and they are the panels, among the five panels, that are mostly dedicated to debates. Here we've got representatives of the civil society, and they will be discussing technological and linguistic developments. There are also people from the most important Max Planck Institute, research heads from Bosch and Google, as well as philosophers who will be our guests. Behind me, you can see the titles of the panels and the names of the contributing people that you can find in the program as well. This is panel number one. This is panel number two, right afterwards, here in our exhibition hall. The second room is the lecture hall, as I said already. And there you will be able to see and watch the panels 3 and 4. But in order to create total confusion, panel number four will stop ahead of panel number three. And according to our plan, it will start at 6 p.m. with a live issue of the famous podcast Die Lage der Nation by Philipp Banse and Ulf Burmeier. This panel number four in the lecture hall will look into questions of political literacy and alphabetization with new narratives and ideas that can lead to this literacy. Here in this framework, from 9:30 onwards, the writer Ben Lerner and the poet Anne Cotton will then also appear on stage. The panel number three, also in the lecture hall, will look into the letters of creation. The lecture hall tonight is a lecture hall, as it were, for very, very focused lectures and debates. And then there is the auditorium. That's the largest hall here with 1,000 seats. And there we can say, you can see, you know, theater, opera, cinema taking place, because that is where the literary and musical contributions will be presented under the heading in the Labyrinth of Omega. Helge Schneider, Dirk von Lozo, Sir Henry, and Lilith Stangenberger will be appearing on stage, and in between you'll get to see film clips by Alexander Kluge. There is a piano up there, there will be people playing music, and there will be surprise guests. And there will also be minute operas from the directing class of Andrea Moses from the University in Ernst Busch, and presented also by acting students under the directorate of Manuel Hilter. You may have seen a couple of those scenes already here in our foyer. In conference room five, that's the fifth, conference room one, the fifth venue here, as Andrea will have public rehearsals for his concert on Friday evening. So you can see that apart from our stage program, there are also artistic exhibits here, but those are not really works of art. They rather represent forms of research materials, you know, resource areas. These are also movie clips that will be shown on stage as well, you know, from Kadir Atir's movies. The Interview Partners will also appear here on stage later on, and Philippa Cesar and has her work about the connection between the digital era and looming, and she will activate that on Saturday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon over there, where unfortunately there are way too many people who couldn't really fit in here any longer. There is an installation by Julia Bruno and Armin Linke, one part of which is looking into multilingualism at the European Court of Justice, and it was created in cooperation with the writer Vincenzo Latonico. And the other part of the installation is looking at the development of languages for robots. And those were experiments from the 90s based on the work of the AI developer Luc Steens in Brussels. And here in the exhibition hall, you can also find the seventh of Alexander Kluge's movie Islands that are distributed all around the house. Tilo Albers created certain scenes for this movie, and the installations for us are a very important element of our environment here for us. Alexander Kluge called it the external skin of our talks and performances that will take place here on stage. Throughout the next days, these films and the archive material that's exhibited here will be activated through the contributions of the people who are part of the program. Snippets from the films from Mr. Bruno and Mr. Linke will also be referenced back to in one of our lecture performances, for example. Now let me move on to the program starting from tomorrow. We've already heard quite a few things about the difference between continuous and discrete elements. Now these are words that will keep popping up time and again. Let me just explain these briefly. Discrete, we call someone discrete who's, for example, able to keep a secret. A discrete means that it's countable and that it is closed off in itself. And that actually comes from, digital, the digit, or the digitus in Latin is a finger that you use for counting. And this is about the countability of elements and of people, and we want to give these elements the necessary space. And that is why in 1500 tomorrow we start with the discrete charm of the alphabet with our contributors here. Sibylle Krämer, Giuseppe Longo, and Jörg Hui. And it will start with a performance by the artistic collective Miel, who will serve as a media technology Madeleine, if you will, that can be eaten by the audience in order to remember what we've suppressed in the digital age. And afterwards, at 6 o'clock, there will be two programs in parallel here at the exhibition hall. There will be the Three Tongues That You Speak in Your Sleep. That's a panel on multilingualism and untranslatability. And in parallel in the lecture hall, there is the archive suite curated by Karin Harasser about the Baroque origins of the digital and the encounter between alphabetic and non-alphabetic cultures in the 17th century, represented by the travels of the Jesuits. And tomorrow evening, we will close the program with the concert by Zandi Bhagwati in Concert Room 1. On Saturday, our program will be dedicated to different positions on artificial intelligence on the one hand and the post-colonial critique of the alphabet and the digital. In the auditorium, there will be a discussion called Stop Making Sense. Here, the artist Tito Steyl and the AI pioneer Luke Steels and Kit Crawford will be discussing ethical questions concerning artificial intelligence. In parallel, Philippa Cesar developed the her program, Looming Cesar, here over there is where it will happen. And then the Countering Vertical Disposition will be next. And this is about the critique of the digital, also with a view to police violence against black people. So the biases that are part of technology, because we fed this technology with a certain information, and we're feeding it with a certain information, and that's also how this information technology came to see the world as we see it, and also reflects the power structures that exist in our world. On Saturday evening, there will be a party with the DJ from African Acid, the future. On Sunday, we will then invite you to come back to really take a relaxed look at all the films and installations here in Peace. And on the afternoon, there will be a single point in our program that we will have in our unlearning place out there in the very colorful architectures in the foyer. It has been going on since yesterday. Those are workshops that you had to register for. And these workshops are about, academic knowledge and unlearning academic knowledge with the help of artists. And with that, I would like to give the floor to the creator of this evening, Alexander Kluge. And I wish all of you loads of pleasure and a lot of fun with our program.
Let me also cordially welcome you. I was never called a creator before. What I think is very beautiful is that we are sitting like in a circus. When you stand here, you don't see the ceiling, you just see the people sitting around me like in a circus. That's absolutely gorgeous. I made a film called artists in the circus on top at the ceiling, having no idea what to do. I mean, when you're on the top, sitting on a rope, you can fall to the right or the left, and you have to keep a balance. And balance is the topic of this whole event. We live in a disruptive world. Actually, we live in two parallel worlds. Silicon Valley, something brilliant in 1945 or 1989, I've been living for a long time, I could never have imagined something like that would emerge. It's something like modernity. But it's also a spaceship that is hovering over the ground, like the artists in a circus, high on top on a rope. And there is the counter algorithm. And counter algorithm is created by being firmly on the ground. This is what elephants are doing, always perpendicular to the ground with their heavy feet and the heavy weight. And the clowns are similar, always on the ground. After this event, if you are fast enough, you can manage to get to the auditorium. There you can see Helge Schneider as a reader or as a robot whisperer. Well, we all know horse whisperers. Horses are quick, but artificial intelligence is even quicker. And the marathon of artificial intelligence is taking place. And that is why it's so important to listen to what these new companions of ours, these artificial intelligence is doing, is knowing while we are asleep. We call that deep learning. The things that robots do, the things that digital devices do is deep learning. They just follow their program. It is not psychological what they're doing, but is very unusually logical and very finely controlled. We always imagine the new 4.0 world as a world having a relationship between individual people and systems, like, for instance, large companies, digital entities. In the old days, we thought there is always a relationship between the individual citizen and the government. Nowadays, when you work practically in industry that is entering into digitalization transformations, like Bosch, they would say, no, the relationship is totally different. We have great industrial productive structures, big systems of distribution that network and are establishing new connections in a digital way. And that means there are always people inside, plus machines and digital entities. They're all together. This new reality is there. And this new reality merges with our traditional life. And we have no say in that. This process happens, just happens. Now, the topic of our first panel is that for the first time, we are in a position where we are not just pushed by evolution. We can take decisions regarding certain elements of evolution. It doesn't mean that certain Chinese people would cut the DNA. This is what the alchemists tried to do in the Middle Ages, make gold and ended up making porcelain. I'm not saying one thing is good and one thing is bad. Let me just say it is impossible to do everything as a human being in terms of evolution, but people are trying to intervene. And we are now in a position where no longer we are so sure that the things that we are doing can be repaired by us in the future. I witnessed the year 1945, ground zero, no state, no bank worked. As a child, I was happy, and then I saw this ground zero, and then everything was replaced by the material society exchange. I had to get cigarettes in Pankow and carry them to another district of Berlin, exchanging in it for some other goods, barter trade, like in the Middle Ages, but full of solidarity and full of fantasy. Hannelore Hauge played recently in a film a woman that saved her husband after the war, when all the women had to collect the bricks of the ruins, clean them, and put them on stacks again. She had to do that with her husband, who had returned as a POW from the war. So they had to clear the rubbles. This is repair. And if you have a situation where you cannot repair anymore, you're no longer sovereign, these are the issues we'd like to explore during this event. And that is why this event, this panel here, is so important. We have 600 minutes of film and 6 or 7 hours of programs tonight. That is a huge event. It maybe is a bit wasteful, but it shows that we take this topic very seriously as the organizers, the curators of this event. And we'd like to ask you to take this topic also very seriously. Maybe it's potlatch, it's waste. This is what the Indian word they have. When the tribe is in need and they want to ask God for something specific, they organize a huge festival, a potlatch, a waste. And this is what we'd like to do today. We have 7 so-called big islands, film islands, like, for instance, Lifetime as a currency, Lebenszeit als Währung. Believe it or not, Lifetime is the real currency. It's not dollars, it's not euros. We give our lifetime when we surf on the World Wide Web. When you sit here, you dedicate your lifetime. It's a solid currency. And look at love relationships. When you kiss somebody tenderly and slowly, it's a good idea. You give your lifetime for that kiss. When you digitize this thing and do it quickly, it's no longer the same thing. So you can check for yourself that lifetime is a currency. And the other thing is the 4.0 world, from digitalization to traditional manufacturers. They're all included in that 4.0 world. All these different realities live next to each other. In the second island, we will focus on evolution. Evolution, language, textuality, and education. Education. Well, as a writer, I cannot find beautiful words for it. I mean, the profession of teacher is not nicely depicted in a traditional German film like Feuerzangenbowle. Also, Fuck You, Goethe, the more modern German film, does not provide you with a beautiful picture of a teacher. But look at the children when they're learning, when they're all immersed in their field of science. So beautiful. In the Russian Revolution, 2 things were supposed to happen, and some things didn't work. Whole trains full of material went to Siberia with light bulbs. That was the beginning of a conquest of a whole world where people started to learn. And now people learned an alphabet. 87% of all the people were illiterate. Now they all have learned to read and write. They have conquered space. I'm absolutely fascinated by that. I would give you 77 operas if I just could have one on learning. And you can learn to unlearn. And another island we have in this room over there is called Z like circus, R like revolution, V like Vernunft, which is reason in German. Here, people have gathered, you on the one hand side, but we also have our protagonists, the people who will be on stage. People get together that normally don't meet in normal life. Mr. Partsinger, how often would he encounter some of the protagonists? So he might have met Hannelore Hoge and Lilith Stangenberg, the 2 actresses. But many of the other protagonists we have, including Helge Schneider, he would never have met them in another forward in another discussion. Ben Lerner is going to come from New York, a poet, a top poet. I wrote a book together with him, and I was enthusiastic about his verses. I always took some of the lines of his poems and wrote a whole story about them. And this is how we created a book together, being happy to be together. And I'm very happy that these people will get together with other interesting people. And if you're very quick running from one event to the other, you'll be able to see Helge Schneider performing in the auditorium. And then you can even manage to come down to panel 2 and 3 that take place in parallel. That is Potlatch. So I wish you a lot of fun during this event.